I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore in the games of Blizzard Entertainment. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my splendiferous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are we today, Matt?
My wings are not in yet. Sorry, guys. I'll try really hard to be splendiferous, but mostly I'm just going to be here. Hopefully that'll work.
Well, I think it'll work just fine for me. So today we're going to be going through some more questions from everybody. Thank you very much for sending those in. Again, if you have questions for this or the other podcast or for the queue, make sure that you send them in. We do have several Discord channels dedicated to this. Obviously, we have a patrons one for all of our lovely patrons out there. And as a way of saying thank you, we try to give you reference, or I guess top billing. When it comes to this stuff, you get preferential treatment if you are a patron. Obviously, we are going to take your questions first, but that doesn't mean we ignore everybody else. If you have you can't support us there, but you still are a listener of the show and you want to send them in, we have a regular Q and podcast questions channel. And if you don't want Discord, that's not your thing, you can send them to us an email. It's podcast@blizzardwatch.com, and we will take those questions as we get them. So we're going to start in. First question. Hello, all. Hope you are well with the stuff happening in the world. My question is about Shadows Rising. Anduin Wrynn. When Anduin is talking to the ranger in the bowels of the ship, something happens. A wisp of purple energy travels down his arm, gather in his palm. It happened in a blink, coming and going. This event startled him, and it sounded like he didn't know what happened. But there not much of a clue to what happened other than the event of it happening. What was it that happened? What does it mean? I'm just baffled what happened and what it could mean to Anduin. What is the lore council's thoughts on this? This is from a Night Elf Druid, Kuro. I mean, it's basically him tapping into his Shadow Priest side, which we know that Anduin has, he's always felt that sort of call of both sides, and they've played at that a couple times. I think this is the first time in the any literature we've had where we've actually seen him draw on it, even unconsciously. But there's hints of it even when we're talking going back to like the Shattering. If you read that, when he's going through his priestly trainings, when he's with the dwarves and going through that, there's already some groundwork for that. But I think that's really all it is. I don't think it's anything too extravagant. I don't think it's any old god corruption or anything along those lines. I really do think it's just him sort of reaching out unconsciously to the power of Shadow because he's so angry, because he's got that sort of emotion attachment to it. Because the light, remember, isn't exactly all about anger and vengeance or, you know, pain. It's basically the opposite of it, whereas Shadow tends to be all about that. If you look at even, like, in-game, the Shadow Priest abilities, Shadow Word Pain, like, it's right there in the name. So, Anything to add to that? Or
no, I was going to be what I said. I thought it was pretty much him touching the void. He's been hanging around with Illyria a bit, and he's, you know, been going through a lot of stress. So, yeah, I definitely think it's just him doing the void.
And we might see some more of that in the future. We don't know. With the events that are happening in the Shadowlands and everything that happens after that point, we don't know the traumas that he will have experienced or anything else there. So we might see more of Shadow Priest Anduin in the future. Only time will tell. But don't be too surprised by it if it comes up again. Our next question comes from Godzilla. Question for Lorewatch. Up from the depths more than 40 stories high, it is I, Godzilla. And no, we don't acknowledge Godzuki.
No, stop. If you don't acknowledge Godzuki, I am not answering your question. We're done here.
Matt is feeling very strong about that, but I acknowledge Godzuki.
Godzuki was the favorite part of that whole thing.
Kaiju babies, man. Come on. They're great.
Well, plus, I mean, quite honestly, if you've ever seen the Filmation Godzilla cartoon, it's really weird.
Yeah, it's super weird.
That's enough. This is not a show about that, but I just had to, I can't let this stand. This blatant calumny thrown on poor Godzuki. Godzuki did yeoman's work on that cartoon, and he deserves to be acknowledged.
Continue. And don't forget, Godzuki is not the same as the child from the actual Toa movies.
There's a big difference there.
All right, I have emerged from my slumber with lore questions for you, and I think this is kind of an important one. I've had a hard time trying to figure out what Blizz has been trying to do with Thrall over the last couple of years. On one hand, I feel retirement is probably good for him, but at the same time, it's clear that he doesn't really want to lead the orcs. Now he's in Shadowlands. He promised Tyrande in Shadows Rising he'd bring her Sylvanas' head, and we have now Draka as a baron over in Maldraxxus. Logic would dictate he would be sent over there to meet his mom at some point to help the Necrolord Covenant, but then what? What would you guys like to see from Thrall in the Shadowlands? As a shaman main, I think it's high time Thrall get his elemental mojo back, and I would like to see some more of him and Greya from the Magar interacting. But what about you guys? What would you like to see from the son of Durotan in Shadowlands? I'll let you go first.
I don't think I'd like to see Thrall get the step back a bit. I don't know. On the one hand, I'm just going to be up front here. The fact that Thrall's around means that Chris Metzen is around in some capacity. You know what I'm saying? Like, if Thrall's got speaking lines, that means that Chris Metzen recorded them. And that means that Chris Metzen's still around in some capacity, and that just warms my heart. That makes me happy. I like that he's around. So same. I don't want him to go away entirely. But I feel like Thrall is one of those characters that when he is around, there is a danger that he is. The guy's named Goel for a reason. He's sort of the Horde Superman. It's very hard to have solid Horde Alliance conflict with Thrall there. And that's one of the reasons they got rid of him in the first place. They retired him, moved him out of the way so they could do this storyline. Because if Thrall's in a position of leadership in the Horde, you don't get the big Alliance Horde fight that we just had. Now, quite frankly, maybe we could use less of Horde Alliance fights, so maybe it's good that Thrall's back. But I definitely want, I think being on the council is the most I want to see out of him. I don't want him to be taking a major leadership role. So honestly, maybe going off and having adventures with his mom's ghost is a good use for him. Because then you don't have to see him. I am curious as to why Durotan doesn't show up. If Draka is like this war leader of the, you know, it's kind of, I was just talking about this. I was just on recording another podcast. Joe was going to be on it next week. So girls going, wow. If you guys don't know it, I was just recording it. And one of the points I made, and I think other people have made this point, maybe it's even made in this letter and maybe that's where I'm getting it from, but there's no planes of eternal reward
The place that you go in the Shadowlands. Yeah.
And I was thinking about that in terms of the whole thing with Thrall and what he's doing there, and the concept of there's no, like, your identity gets stripped away from you in almost every single one of these planes. Bastion, they take your memory. They make you give up your memory. in Revendreth, they try to purge you of your sins. And who are you if you're not the things you've done? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a huge story point about most of the realms in the Shadowlands that we go to.
And it's something I'm thinking about in terms of, like, Thrall has had a really hard time defining himself for the past, you know, several expansions. He's had a hard time defining himself, time figuring out who he is. He's not the war chief anymore. He doesn't want to be. But he's not a shaman anymore either. He lost that. He angered the elements and they refused to speak to him. I think the reason he hasn't gotten it back has to tie into what he's like, what is it he's not facing? There's,
mm-hmm.
I hope that in Shadowlands Thrall will face that he did wrong when he killed Garrosh. Not that Garrosh necessarily should have lived, but the way Thrall killed him, the reason Thrall killed him, what he said when he killed him, and how he made it happen were wrong. He didn't ask the elements. He was acting like a dark shaman there. And that's what broke his connection. The elements refused to listen to him now because he did that thing. He compelled them. And that's a, you know, and plus the way he killed, just, there's a ton of stuff. Like, I'd like to see him and Garrosh have a meeting. I'd like to see Garrosh get to say, you know, now that you've killed me, you can't do it again. So now you're going to listen when I tell you that it was your fault. That this was your fault. You put me in this position. But I mean, that would be what I'd like to see. I'll now leave it up to Joe.
No, and along that same line, one of the things that I've always found, I don't want to say interesting, but always, to me, it was fascinating that they sort of left it open-ended. Like, his story never finished, right? Thrall picked up, went and had kids, and started a farm. That's it. He never dealt with anything. He never dealt with what he did to Garrosh. He never dealt with what he did with the Horde. He never dealt with what he did to the Alliance, because his actions with Garrosh directly led to a lot of things that happened to the Alliance. Like, these are Thrall's actions that brought these about, right? He never dealt with any of that. And one of the things I think that has been hounding his character is he's never had a chance to deal with it, confront it, and heal. And I think that's part of why he lost his shamanism. Because one of the things that has always been center to all of the stories of shamanism in the game, all the things you interact with, all the quests, all the shaman-specific content, is that you have to be in balance. You have to be okay. Because if you are not okay, you cannot perform shamanistic rites. The elements will not deal with you. The elements will not broker any sort of exchange with you when you are in this place of unbalance, because then what winds up happening is you start getting things like Dark Shaman, where if an element can't give you something and you're in a place of hurt, next thing you know, you're demanding it. Next thing you know, you're enslaving them to your will to get it. And so cutting them off from Thrall, who is very flawed, very hurt, and especially at that moment, right? Like, when he kills Garrosh, it's not just him performing that act, right? It's all of that pain, all of that realization that this is the hell that I wrought comes over Thrall, and it sort of strips his balance, his humor from him. It strips part of his identity, because that's not who he is. Instead of dealing with it, instead of accepting his problem, instead of confronting it, he murdered it. And then he has to deal with everything else. So what I want to see from Thrall in the Shadowlands is I want to see him start to deal with that. I want a confrontation with Garrosh. I want him to have a heart-to-heart with his mother about everything that's happened. I want him to start to heal. And the reason I want that is not because I want him to come back as a leader of the Horde, but I think as a symbol of the orcs, he is very much part and parcel with the soul of that race on Azeroth. Not necessarily any of the ones that come from off-world anymore or from the alternate realities, but the ones that are born and raised on Azeroth, that are born in this conflict. And there have been several generations at this point that have sprung up over the course of however many years, 14, 15, 16 years in the game. I'd like to see him be in a position where he can become essentially the new, you know, spiritual advisor, where he heals to a point where he understands things. I mean, what was it? Drek'thar was so much that for his father and for Thrall for a number of years. He's not around anymore. Not really. Like, the last time we saw him was in the Shaman Hall, and he was feeble and old and ready to be done. It's time for Thrall to maybe take up that mantle, but he can't do that until he heals. And this allows him to be around and still have influence without being the main focus. And he can still go do other things. He can go on, you know, spiritual adventures with his mother. They could go looking for his father. They could, you know, he could teach his kids how to be heroes or whatever the case is. He could maybe have a quiet life in between. But he doesn't have to be necessarily the leader of the Horde. He doesn't have to necessarily be the centerpiece. But he could be in that position where he's responsible enough to go, okay, this is wrong, and I need to make sure that they understand that it's wrong, and be that voice, that sort of conscious that, honestly, the Horde has lacked for a long time. And I say this as a Horde player. We haven't had a conscience. We haven't had somebody sitting there saying, what you're doing is wrong. Like, we've just been going from point to point to point. And the one chance we had at having that with Zul'jin as, like, a war chief position, he died. Then Sylvanas took over. And then, you know, I'm making a waving hand gesture at most of battle for Azeroth. I think that that could be good. And yes, we can still have conflicts and things like that, but that's what I want to see. I want to see Thrall heal, and then in a way come back as that conscious to the Horde. So, anything else to add to that one, my friend?
No, I think that's pretty good. I think we both basically agree that Thrall needs to get some actual closure.
Yeah. And I think
that's basically what we're saying.
Yeah. And it will only strengthen the other characters, right? It'll only strengthen the story. So,
this is the top result.
That was my, apparently, Siri deciding that she was going to react to that, of all things.
Yeah, we'll figure. You know, you have to be careful when you say anything with, like, a sir, you know, just boom. That's my name! No, I was saying something else. No, it's my name! I heard my name!
All right, our next question comes from Braylon. A question for Lorewatch. Hi, Watchers. Longtime patron Braylon here. Since Legion, while I still miss Varian terribly, his death opened up so much character potential for so many other characters. The trade-off was worth it. My question then is a simple one. Which characters do you see as plot blockers who you feel would most serve WoW's development with their deaths? I'll let you go first.
Thanks. I'll let you go first into this landmine of a question, Matt. No, go ahead. Go on in. Let's see if you get exploded. Yikes. I don't really see characters that way. If a character's dead, their story's done, and the effects they have on the story are only in through their absence. You know, I have a hard time with the idea that it's better to kill a character and see the effect they had than to have that character themselves. Like, for instance, I'm actually really sad Anduin Lothar's dead. And yeah, he's been dead since Warcraft 2. It's not like, you know, they just killed him and I'm still not dealing with it. I think it's just been long enough. It's been long enough that Anduin Lothar's been dead longer than he was alive, but I still sometimes wish he was around to have reactions to the story that's going on. It's one of the reasons I'm glad Turalyon and Ilaria came back. We get to have the old school characters reacting, especially with Turalyon. Turalyon is fascinating because he reacts to stuff like it's still Warcraft 2.
Because for him, it really is.
Well, kind of, but he's been around, he's been at war for 1,000 years. So if anything, he comes back to an Azeroth that he would expect to be wholly changed because 1,000 years has passed, but not just for him. For Azeroth, it's been like 20, 30 years. So it's like, you got to think that's going to be really strange. But at least, you know, he is a character that represents a different style of gameplay, a different world. And I like that. I like that he's there to have the impact as a character. Dead means their stories are done. I mean, although since we're going to Shadowlands again, we're going to see people like Draka and Alexandros Mograine. So we are going to see characters' stories continue even though they're dead. But I have a really hard time like saying, oh yeah, we'd be better off with that character dead. I mean, would there be a ton of new stories opened up if Thrall died? Absolutely. Does that mean we're better off with Thrall dead? No.
I think the real thing that you got to take away from this question isn't necessarily what would serve better if the character was dead. It's that, are any characters that are currently alive blocking any specific thing? Like, I think that with Varian, I think the point that Braylon's trying to make is, while he was alive and returned back to the Alliance, how many stories revolved or involved him specifically? Right.
Yeah, like, I mean, let me put it this way. I said earlier that you can't have certain kinds of Horde Alliance conflict with Thrall around. And I think that that's a fair point. But you don't have to kill Thrall to get him out of the way so you can tell those stories. If you think there's a character who's blocking a story from happening as a writer, you can move the character in such a way that they're not able to interfere with the story you want to tell. You don't have to kill them for that. I honestly felt like they could have just as easily had Varian just simply retire. Like, he could have, you know, you could have had him come back from the Broken Shore, like, you know, like in a cast, like so messed up that he's barely alive, and have him say to Anduin, I can't do it anymore. This is on you now. I've given everything and here I am. But his death worked as a moment too. I think I felt less aggrieved. I felt really sad that that Varian was dead, and his death was very, like, very powerful. But I didn't necessarily mind it the way I minded Vol'jin's death. Because Vol'jin, I felt like there's a guy whose story was not done.
Yeah.
And it felt, I still feel that way. Like, even now that we know we're going to see more of him and it's going to be involved in stuff, it felt like Vol'jin got the short end there. Whereas Varian, at least, it felt like Varian had earned a heroic death and he got to have it, you know? Like, I could actually imagine Sorfang being, like, you know, pleased for it. Like, yeah, that's how a warrior should go. You know, in the teeth of the fight, you know, against impossible odds, he destroyed that robot and saved his people. That's how you go. I can't think of any characters in the game right now that I think removing them in that way would just make more story possibilities happen. Let me put it that way. I do not see it. When I look at a character, I see story potential. Not, well, you're preventing stories from happening. No, I don't see that. That's not how I look at them. So it's a very hard question for me to answer, because I just... Like, even Sylvanas, I don't want Sylvanas dead. I want to see more after Shadowlands with her.
Yeah.
And that means, like, dealing with what she's done and why she did it. That's just me.
And it's a difficult question to answer, because I actually don't think any character that we really have blocks the plot. Not currently. Everything that we have going on right now, the plot is moving forward. I think the closest we got to that was really Sylvanas in Battle for Azeroth, but even that rode that line, I think, really well. And it's a hard question for us to answer, at least in my perspective, because of what Matt just said. It's really hard to wish for the death of a character, because what does that death serve? And a lot of times in Warcraft in particular, the deaths serve nothing. Or if they do serve anything, it's a punctuation point before we feel that their stories are done. Like you said, Vol'jin is a really great example of that. We didn't get a lot from him as his role in Warchief, something that we all expected that he was being groomed for or built for forever. Especially if you're a Horde player, you saw all the signs in all the questings, interactions, and everything that happened. He basically was doing what Rokhan's doing now. He was stepping up, being that person that was making sure things were going smoothly, making sure that the Warchief's will was, I don't want to say done, but done in such a manner that it was, when he could directly affect it, not an absolute terrible thing. And when he died, it was a punctuation point, but that's all it served. And yes, we get more of his story now, And we're going to get more of it in Shadowlands, though. We haven't seen any of it yet. At least I haven't. And I think, you, despite all the time that you've had in the beta, I don't think you've seen it either. But I don't think it's in-game yet. I think there will be stuff. But we don't know what it is yet. We don't know what the scope of it is. The stuff that's going on with Tyrande, those are major points, but they're not the only point. It's not blocking other story from developing. As a matter of fact, like, it's when you, and this is not really a big spoiler thing, and I apologize if anybody out there thinks it is, but when you start doing the Shadowlands stuff, when you start doing your Maw experience, one of the things is noting that you have to find Tyrande because you don't know where she is. And that's something that they've talked about a lot. It's you find pretty much everybody but her. You have no idea where she is. You have no idea what's going on. So just like the end of Battle for Azeroth, she's important to the story, but she's not there. It's not all wrapped up around her. That's not the only important thing that is going on. And I don't think any character, aside from the player character, is really that central right now to what's going on. Everybody else feels like they have their own things going on. The world is still developing. The characters are still involved in various other stories, whether it's in the zones or back home. So I don't know that anybody really is a lore block or a story block or a plot block of any type. I think they've actually hit a pretty good balance point with almost everybody, where I don't think it's really that big of a problem now. It definitely used to be. I mean, back during the days of when we used to affectionately refer to a Thrall in an epithet that I will not repeat, there was a reason for that, because everything revolved around him. Everything, he was the central point. So, but I think they've gotten so much better at it, I don't think it's a problem anymore.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, hype on this. I don't want to keep emphasizing it. But again, when you kill a character, unless you do the revolving door of death thing, when you kill a character, that's it for their stories. You can't tell any more stories about a dead person. Again, Shadowlands is one of the few times you get an exception on that. But that's kind of the genius of Shadowlands, is that it is a place where you get, you know, Kael'thas can show up, but he's still dead. You didn't undead him. He's still dead. He just happened to be in the lands of the dead. So it's much like the part of the Odyssey where Odysseus goes down and talks to the spirits of the dead. You get to have an Achilles appearance, even though Achilles is quite dead, but you happen to be in the land of the dead, so that's fine. I think there's a certain amount of poetry in that.
Yeah, and we don't know how that's all going to shake out, too, because now we have an opportunity to talk with long-dead NPCs, if it really comes up to it, or if it serves the story. We could talk to, you know, as Matt pointed out, you know, he's mad that Anduin Lothar is dead. There's a possibility that we could find Anduin Lothar somewhere in the Shadowlands. We don't know what realms are out there besides the ones that we've seen so far. There could be more. There could be other ones that we can open gateways to. One of the things in the scenes of, like, it's the Ring of Transference in Ouroboros. There's a million doorways, and you literally call them down when you go to your zones. Like, you call this doorway down. It's not always there. But when you look up in the sky, there's a ton of them. There is a potential for an infinite number of realms up to the imagination of the developers. So we could talk to anybody. The story could go any way. And it's, I say this with the utmost excitement, it's one of those few times where it's sort of just full of potential and possibility. And I feel like a kid on Christmas where I can see threads where they can go a million different directions and I don't know where they're going to go. Which I think also contributes to the part that I feel like no one really feels like a plot block, because really there's a million roads to travel, and I don't think they're going to be blocking anything. So we have another question from Braylon as well. Speaking of areas of Shadowlands, the area of Shadowlands we visit seem like realms where souls are recruited into service, but there is no realm of eternal reward, no heaven or Valhalla, if you will. But while rereading Before the Storm and Shadows Rising, both Will Benton and Zakan visualize a peaceful afterlife. Is that just the wishful thinking of us poor Azerothian mortals, or is there evidence somewhere that such a realm actually exists in either the Shadowlands or elsewhere?
In terms of evidence, I mean, we haven't really even scratched the surface of Shadowlands yet. I will point out, though, that Valhalla is interesting because it is not a heaven. Mm-hmm. Valhalla was the mead hall where Odin took the most successful. We've got Valhalla already. We've actually got that's the Halls of Valor. That's a Valhalla. That's what it is. That's the Halls of Valor, the Valor Hall, Valhalla. That's what the warrior, like, you know, order hall in Legion is. It's Valhalla. Where Odin took the most, you know, the most noble, most worthy warriors, and they served him, you know, in there, feasting and meeting, all that's all right there. So we've got one of those. And for that matter, Bastion kind of follows that model, although it costs you. You get to be internally of service to others, and you lose everything that made you who you are. You lose your memories. You lose your life. The person that you were is no longer there. And some people obviously rebel against it. And that's the whole story of Bastion. But that's what Bastion kind of is. So it's kind of like that as well. In terms of like a true, honest, you know, Elysian Fields, paradise, heaven type place, I don't see anything like that so far. In fact, it's actually interesting that of the various zones you go to, the Maw is obviously effectively a place of eternal banishment. That's you go there and that's where you stay because you're just that evil, or because you're getting sucked down there. That's there. We don't really know yet why it is that when you disable the Arbiter, suddenly everybody goes to the Maw, which implies that originally everybody went to the Maw before, and maybe the Maw predates all the other zones, all the other Shadowlands, for lack of a better word. That's an implication. It's not stated. But that might mean at one point the Maw was where everyone went, and therefore everybody experienced the same afterlife, and maybe the reason the Maw is as bad as it is now is was purely a choice by the person who's currently in charge of it. we don't know. I certainly do think it's interesting that of the planes, like in Revendreth, they peel away your sins, the things that you did that were – if you're bad enough to go to Revendreth but not bad enough to go to the Maw – they flense the things you did out of you and use that to gain anima. They literally peel your existence, your actions, your choices away from you. They do that in Bastion as well. Ardenweald is sort of similar, actually, in that you go back, but it's not you that goes back. Like the anima of your existence goes back, but you stay in the Shadowland. You stay in Ardenweald forever, unless you're like, you know. Obviously, it's not the case for, like, the wild gods and so forth who seem to go back more directly. But that's interesting to think about. In each case, the anima is you. It's your memories. It's your sins. It's your choices. It's your life. And that's, like, you know, Maldraxxus, I can't really say. I have not actually done much in Maldraxxus. I know that there's various figures from lore who are, like, Joe mentioned Draka, Alexandris Mograine is there, and I forget who I think Lady Vash.
Yep.
Yeah, Lady Vash is there as well. So there's, you know, big lore characters who end up in Maldraxxus. I don't know if there's any point where they lose anything or if they get sent back. I'm not sure how it works for Maldraxxus, to be honest. But at least three of them, you parts of you, a big part of you, your identity, your essential nature is peeled away from you. So it implies that the Shadowlands were going to have some role in separating the self from the essence. And that's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. The other thing, like going back to the root of the question of the realm of eternal rest or reward or whatever you want to call it, we don't know because we haven't seen all of the Shadowlands. One of the things that I picked up on when playing through the areas is that everybody that resides in the areas that we go to, Revendreth, Maldraxxus, Bastion, Ardenweald, even the Maw, anything you are capable of interacting with at some point has knowledge, and Ouroboros as well, has knowledge of essentially what feels like an infinite number of realms. They don't say it specifically, but they say they don't give you like a number, like there's exactly 10,001 realms. It's more where they say like everything that's out there or all the realms that are out there, especially if you're talking with like the, I think they're called the custodians, But basically the folks that operate as like the hands, eyes, and mouth of the Arbiter, they talk about that as well. And they there's definitely the implication of it. And like I said, when you open up a pathway to one of these areas, you're calling down a door, you're calling down a gateway that opens up essentially what is like a slider's tunnel between Orbos and whatever zone you're going to. It even looks like it. It even has like a slipstream and has a visual effect that shows you traveling like these weird pathways to get there. And you look in the sky and you can see hundreds of these types of doors. And that they just kind of go off into the distance and they sort of fade out of view. There could be a place of eternal reward. Like when we're talking about what Zikhan sees, when he asks about, you know, what does he have, what's waiting for him, essentially he sees that scenario where Sarfang's in a place of eternal rest, eternal reward, of happiness. And a lot of people are speculating that that was just Bwamsamdi being Bwamsamdi and lying to him. But the interesting thing that got to me about it is, like, looking back at Bwamsamdi, he doesn't lie. He tells half-truths. He'll omit things. But he hasn't outright lied to anybody in any of the interactions in the stories, in the game. He doesn't. He just might not tell you something. So if he showed Zikhan that, there's a really good chance that that place actually exists.
Hold on a sec. You just made me think of something.
Oh?
When Zikhan asking what happened to Sorfang, or is he saying what will happen to me?
It's kind of implied it's sort of both, like what awaits.
See, the thing, if Zikhan is saying what am I looking forward to? What's my afterlife? He might be being shown something he'd want to see, not as a lie, but just, you know, here's sure. What you were looking for. Here's how it would be, and the Sarfang he sees might be just something he would want to see. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like he might be seeing his ideal fantasy of what eternal rest is.
It's not because, you know, he has no context. He has never seen it. He has no way of knowing what that's like. I don't know. It's your point about him not lying is valid, but it's striking me that we don't actually understand what he's being shown.
Then that's a point that I was going to make too, is like the other side of that is we don't know the validity of what's being shown because we don't have a reference point. We don't have a way to fully understand the context. And that's sort of a big deal, right? Like that's a thing to be aware of. That's a thing to know. But it is also entirely possible that we will find a way to go to those places. It also might be why we don't see Durotan so far. He could be somewhere where he earned his eternal reward for what he did. And Draka may have felt she had unfinished business. And that's why we interact with her. Which would sort of make sense with the way their characters played out. We might see those places. We might see these peaceful afterlives. You know, the Will Benton stuff, that's another really good point. Like when he describes what he sees, could that be the grace of the light? Could that be his reward for his life well lived? Could that be him going to that particular place? We don't know. We don't have a reference point yet. But if I had to put money on it, if I had to make a bet, if I had to throw something out there, I think that there are realms where souls can go to that are like Elysium, that are like, you know, heaven, that are these realms of eternal rewards or peace for these characters who don't have an abundance of pride that needs to be stripped away because maybe it already was, or don't have an abundance of sin because they lived good lives, or have tamed the wildness in them so they don't need to have that run out. They already have their lives filled with service, because that's the other thing too. Look at the people that we see presented in eternal reward format, right? Like Will Benton and you know, Sarfang. Sarfang's pride was stripped away. He realized everything he did was wrong. He tried to make it right. He was broken down. He was pulled down to his base self until at the very end. Like and you can argue to what degree that was, but he had to come to a reckoning of what everything he did, right? And yeah, it was maybe it was definitely not enough to make up for the things that he helped, you know, burn down and the lives that he helped destroy. But it was something where that sort of pride, that sort of sin, he was trying to make it right already. And we don't know how that's judged because, again, Arbiter being inactive, we don't understand how that works yet. But his life was full of service. His life was at that point, I would argue, probably free of the pride because, well, he gave his life for something bigger than himself to try to make things right. That sin may have been washed away, and he wasn't a wild soul anymore. He doesn't fit in any of those four categories. He doesn't fit in any of those four realms. So maybe he got to go somewhere where, you know, he got his reward, where he didn't fit anywhere else, and that's why he was sent there. Because I think that's the other thing that I'm picking up on is the souls that go to these other realms, when they go to Bastion, they go to Ardenwell, they go to Maldraxxus, they go to Revendreth, there is a very specific reason that they go there. There's a very specific reason that their soul is sent there. And who knows what makes that decision until we wake up the Arbiter and actually get an idea of how that works. So yeah, that's all I got on that one. Anything else to add before we move on?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. This one is from Bill. Hello, lore aficionados. I stopped playing just as Legion launched because I became a father, and my children are now taking up what was my game time. I love WoW lore. I listen to the audiobooks in your podcast, but is there a good way to listen or watch videos about the in-game lore? Would you consider making a podcast series explaining the main story plots in-game? Thanks for the quality podcast, and hope you're all doing well. I don't know Matt's feelings on it, but I'm sure I'll find out in a second. But if this is something that folks would really want to hear, we could probably start doing a series every now and then of, you know, the Warcraft history of in-game stuff from vanilla through the ages. But it's a long journey. It's 16 years at this point. We could do it, but I would want to make sure that it is something that everybody would want to do or everybody would want to hear. And if it's something that a lot of folks do want to hear, maybe we could work it in, especially on weeks where we may be light on questions for whatever reason. I'd be perfectly willing to do that. There is also a possibility that we could talk to the powers that be and maybe it becomes an extra thing. But what do you think about something like that, Matt? Would you be willing to participate in that?
Absolutely not, and I will oppose you to the death.
I thought as much. Curse you.
I mean, we've done this kind of thing before. I mean, it's what, you know, the original Know Your Lores were.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, certainly wouldn't be a problem. I would actually say if you're looking for that kind of thing, you could go look at the Know Your Lores on Blizzard Watch right now, if you don't mind doing a little reading, and you could get a lot of that. But yeah, if there were subjects people wanted to explain in that way, I certainly am not opposed to either doing maybe a segment or doing a special podcast for it. But no, I don't have any problem with that. I you know, can't say we will do that, but I don't have any opposition to that idea. No, absolutely not.
Yeah, and as far as like stuff that are out there that already exists, there are some that do stuff like that sporadically. I don't remember their names off the top of my head, but there are some that are out there. But if it is something you want us to do, let us know out there, folks. Not just Bill, but everybody else. If this is something you want to hear the Lore Watchers do, let us know. We'll see what we can do about it. Our next question. Dear Watchers, I was listening to episode 135 of the Lore Watch, and I had some thoughts and questions about the Clockwork universe. It is clear that Nor's Domu and the whole universe is stuck in a time loop. In other words, everything that has ever happened and will happen has already happened, including Murazond and the Infinite Dragonflight trying to break the cycle. What we perceive as us making choice isn't actually a choice at all. Would the way to actually change something in the cycle be to somehow find a being that isn't part of the cycle? For example, one that transcends realities? Or find a moment in time where you can maybe change a slight thing, a moment that has never happened before and isn't part of the cycle? What beings can you think of that could achieve such a thing? And what moment in time do you think was the start point and started all of it? As for me, I somehow get the feeling that the Void and maybe the Lotus would have to be somehow involved. I'm wondering if it means locus. I have no theories about what started it all, though. Thanks for the great show and all you do to keep me up with the lore, even though I've stopped playing. Have a great day. And this is from Zabu, the undead priest of Twisty Nether. What do you think, Clockwork Universe?
I don't buy his argument. It's not a time loop just because it's happening in fourth dimensional path. From the perspective of the people going through the time travel, it's a straight line. They're not looping. It's not repeating itself. It's not happening over and over again. It just happens once. There's a throughway. You go from Nosdormu to Murazond to death. It goes from beginning to end. It's got a completely logical and understandable chronology as long as you ignore the fact that they are moving through time. If you just look at the events as they happen in the life of Nosdormu, there's a straight line. And that straight line goes from birth to becoming the Aspect to, you know, his clash with the old gods that sent several people back in time to the original War of the Ancients through to the present day. In fact, he's still on that path, and he hasn't reached the end of it yet. He has not become Murazond yet from the perspective of him going through his personal timeline. Now, he may, in fact, have already turned into Murazond. Maybe that's what he's doing right now. Maybe he is currently becoming Murazond. That I can't answer you. But it's not a time loop. The way I know it's not a time loop is that there's two versions of the War of the Ancients. There's the War of the Ancients as we originally happened, and then there's the War of the Ancients where a red dragon, an orc, and a wizard travel back in time and change the War of the Ancients. And I know they did it because in Legion, we see them. We go back, we watch the war as it was happening, and Ronan and Kairos and Brox are there in the past. Our past. We see that they happened. We see that Illidan remembers them. The timeline, as the world that we're in right now, is a separate, alternate timeline from the one we started in. And it has been since before World of Warcraft started. Between Warcraft 3 and World of Warcraft, that time discrepancy happened, that time warp. They were sent back, then they came back to this time, and they had altered the past. And that's how we know it's not a time loop, because Nosdormu did that. That happened in Nosdormu's life. It's not looping. He's not going back over and over again to the same start point. He has one throughway, and it ends just like everybody else's life. It just ends in our future. The difference between him and everybody else is that he knows how his life is going to end. That's not a time loop. It's not that he's repeating the same events over and over again. And because, therefore, I don't think it's a time loop, I don't believe there's any, in order to, the Clockwork Universe isn't a time loop that we're going through. It's just the structure of the universe. Now, do the old gods want to break the structure of the universe? Absolutely they do. That's what they're all about. They absolutely want to break the structure. They want to, prevent order from occurring. They want all possibilities to exist, and therefore that one thing that the light believes is the one true outcome, that's not for them. They want chaos. They want everything can be true. You know, nothing is forbidden. Yeah, everything is true. Nothing is forbidden. That thing. They want that kind of thing. They want all the possible options to be on the table. So, yeah, they come from outside. Yeah, they want to mess everything up. But I don't believe there is a time loop here. So the rest of your question isn't something I can really deal with.
The other thing to really note about that is there are certain other things that are canonical in the game that sort of defy the idea of a time loop, one of them being Karazhan. Specifically, Karazhan is a point that travels backwards through time. It is not on a loop. If it was on a loop, the things that happened with Medivh would be wildly different. Because at that point, Medivh, having knowledge beyond his years, beyond his mortal frame, would have had more of an idea of how, if it was stuck in a loop, that it was a cycle, more than what he's already said and what we've interacted with him and what we know about his place of residence. It also would be something that I think certain other creatures and entities in the universe would be cognizant of to a certain degree. Certainly the Titans would be as well. A lot of the things the Titans do are not really something that, if they had knowledge of it, which one would assume empowered beings by the Titans, if they have knowledge that it's a loop, chances are good that the Titans would have that knowledge as well, that it's not something that they would do. They wouldn't worry about planets dying because of time's a loop. They'll just come back. It'll be fine. And they could try to alter small things. But they don't. They want to keep things moving smoothly. They want to have the universe working in its mechanical form. And I think that's what it is more than anything else.
Yeah, I think if you want to look at the concept of time loop versus just simply having knowledge of like time travel, there's a Star Trek episode, Star Trek The Next Generation episode, where they get into a time loop. And there's Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day is pretty much is a completely bog-standard time loop. He's living the same period of time over and over again. If
Doctor Nostromo Strange. Was on,
Dormammu, I've come to bargain. If Nostromo was living a time loop, then he would always get to the moment of his death, and then he'd go back to the beginning with, you know, awareness of what had just happened to him. And what, you know, he would therefore know what he had done, and he would make different choices, and it wouldn't matter, and he'd time loop again. Nostromo shows no sign of this. Nostromo does not seem to believe he's living in a time loop. He does not react like, oh yes, this is happening again. He's reacts like, I've seen this. This is something I've foreseen. My knowledge of the future is such that I'm aware of this. But he doesn't act like, oh, this again. He hasn't lived through these events more than once. And I think that's important. This is not a time loop. And therefore, that's not the way to change things. The things, you don't have to break us out of a time loop because there isn't a time loop. It just does not seem to be what they've been going for. I mean, you know, maybe they'll hear this. Someone at Blizzard will be listening, go, time loop, and then they'll, you know, do it. I don't know. Usually they don't. It doesn't work that way, but, you know, who knows? But, yeah, I do.
Also, I'll just say, Steve, please don't do a time loop.
Yeah. I don't think that's where it's going, so.
Yeah, and we could be wrong, but it's all the indicators in the game, all the indicators in the story don't really lend to it. But we'll find out in the future, because we are going to be dealing with some wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff. It's just sort of the nature of the beast. I think we have time for one more question, possibly two. We only have two left. Hello, friends. Quick question. Why wasn't the Void or the Old Gods helping us fight the Burning Legion? I mean, outside of Xalatath, was any of them trying to help us win that fight? You'd think they would have a stake in that conflict, no? Thanks for all you do, Uthos, Aspect of Lore Podcast.
Uthos, no, they don't care.
They don't care. They didn't see the Burning Legion as a threat at all. They flat out say that at several points. Yeah.
The Legion has destroyed countless worlds. Mm-hmm. Countless ones. We don't know how many they've destroyed. They were invading like six of the worlds when we got to Argus. They do it all the time. And the Old Gods have never felt particularly put out by it or moved by it. They don't care. There's one dungeon in Burning Crusade, Arcatraz, where the
yeah.
I want to say the Harbinger Skyris.
Harbinger Skychris or Skyris or whatever.
You know, he basically says, we span the universe as countless as the stars, and no force, you know, not even the mighty Legion, has the power to bend us, to make us bend our knee. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. They respect the Legion as a force of destruction, but that's fine by them. Go ahead and destroy everything. That's one of the possibilities we believe exists, and in the end, it'll just bring the Void closer. So from their perspective, everything Sargeras is doing, everything the Legion is doing, is not just pointless, it's actually beneficial to them. They'll get what they want. When the universe is destroyed and there's no possibility of any resistance, then the Void will just swallow it all whole.
Mm-hmm.
They're not put out. So go ahead, why would they help us? It doesn't benefit them in any way.
Yeah, it didn't matter to them who won, right? Because they had... They see all possibilities. They see everything that could possibly happen if you want to go that route with it. So if you think that they didn't plan for us losing to the Legion, you'd be wrong. They had a plan in place where they knew how they would react. They knew what would happen. And like Matt said, it would fit neatly into their plans because that's what they do. Just like we won. So what did they do? Nyalotha happened. That whole thing happened. An entire expansion worth of manipulation happened. So like, yep. It didn't matter. It didn't matter who won. And that's, to them, why bother getting involved when you can just sit back and let everything happen and then just do what you're going to do anyway, because that's exactly what they did.
There's that old thing about how, you know, let's you and him fight. You know, the Legion fights us. Whoever wins that fight just came out of a fight with, like, a force strong enough to stop it. So they're weakened, and then they can, the old gods and their minions can move in and mop up the resistance. It's classic logic. It's not the enemy of my enemy is my enemy's enemy, but you go ahead and you fight. You two fight, and I'll take the winner. You know, that means that the winner, I'm fresh, you guys had to fight. So whoever wins that fight, you were just in a fight, and now I get to fight you, I'm fresh, and you were just in a fight. That's kind of how they're looking at this. It doesn't matter to them who the winner is, as long as everybody ends up losing.
And another thing to really consider, too, is if we take the point that all they want is a void titan from the very beginning, like, that's the belief, that's why they wanted to infect Azeroth, Sargeras is a titan that has shown that he is capable of being corrupted. It just happens to be Fel right now. So let him come to Azeroth. Let him cradle Azeroth. Let him sup on the power of Azeroth. And that power is subtly corrupted, or that power is in such a manner that even he can't understand, where they can worm their way into his dreams, his thoughts. I mean, do you think that had Sargeras won, that Nyalotha wouldn't have happened for him? That N'Zoth wouldn't have found a way into his brain space? We know for a fact Titans can be altered. Look at Agamar and look at the souls of the Titans as they're being tortured and reprogrammed. They can be altered. They can have their perspective shifted. And who's really good at shifting perspectives? Who's really good at altering minds? The Void and the Old Gods, that's sort of their bag. That's what they do. We've seen it through countless NPCs. We've seen it even with us. The very first encounter in Nyalotha is us murdering Rathion because he's gone crazy. And even Rathion has a hard time reconciling it, because in his brain space, that perspective was 100% him. Right? Like, they're really good at that. And if you think Sargeras was immune to that, sorry, wrong. They absolutely would have found a way to worm in into his way, into his brain, into something like that. So that's why they didn't help us, because they didn't care. And I think we'll do our last one, and this one comes from our friend Drew Miller. Greetings, Watchers. Do you think that the Jailer could turn out to be Argus, or an aspect of Argus, or that we'll even see him in Shadowlands? He was labeled the Titan of Death. His encounter was laden with death-themed abilities and dialogue, and on this side of the Shadowlands, he was a one-Titan reincarnation shop for demons, which seriously parallels what seems to be going on in Ardenweald. Thanks.
Well, he was called the Titan of Death in the files, but he wasn't actually called the Titan of Death in the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. I did some research on Argus before this show, obviously, because, you know, we were going to be talking about him. And one of the interesting things is originally they'd intended him not to necessarily be the end boss so much as kind of like the last wing. It was going to be like a chained up Argus whose body we went and had encounters on. Kind of like Deathwing, but even bigger. And they didn't go that route, obviously. And we got what we got, which I think is actually a better route. You don't want to keep doing the thing where you climb around inside of a giant monster's body. But the thing about him is he wasn't so much the Titan of Death as he was like the Unmaker. He was completely and totally broken. He was unmade, and he unmade things himself. I don't think... For one thing, the Jailer and the Arbiter have been doing what they've been doing for countless years. And the Jailer has a personality when we meet him. He says things. He doesn't... Argus didn't speak at all except to scream. Like, he was just... He was like... Argus was suffering. Argus has been tormented internally by the Legion. The Jailer does not come off as somebody who's been that way. And that's even ignoring the fact that the Jailer and the Arbiter have been doing this kind of stuff for literal centuries. Thousands, maybe tens... We don't have no idea how long they've been at it. Argus literally just died. So I don't think it's likely. I mean, there's ways you could make it work. You could say that, you know, at the moment of his death, Argus's essence was hurled back through time and space and whatever. Because the Shadowlands, time acts differently there. And so he arrived at the beginning and created the Shadowlands. If that's where you want to go with it, you could do that. But I don't think that's where they're going. I do not think the Jailer is Argus. I do not know if Argus is even going to show up. I don't think he is. It seems pretty clear that Titans don't go to the Shadowlands when they die. We've seen the Titans die, and because one of them decided to cast a spell, he ended up going, their souls ended up going and fragmenting inside their own creations. I don't think that we're going to see Argus in the Shadowlands. But yeah. I don't know. Maybe we will. It could happen.
And that's the thing. Like, this is the thing that happened with Argus is something that isn't supposed to technically be possible. Titans aren't technically supposed to be able to die like that. And we've sort of seen that to a certain extent with what we saw with the Titans already. It's they don't really die. Their souls just kind of still exist. And maybe they form into new bodies, which they kind of did in front of us. But however that process works, they don't go to the Shadowlands. Where Argus, what happened with him and what we did with him, we don't know. We don't know the aftermath of that. We don't know what
there's
happened.
Also, there's one thing to point out, too. The other Titans use Argus's essence to capture Sargeras.
To a certain extent, yeah.
They straight up say, you know, we're using his power to do this. It's possible Argus isn't dead as we understand it.
He could be chains that bind Sargeras.
Yeah, he literally is. He is involved in that process. That's how they got Sargeras there. They used the power of Argus to do it. It could be that he'll only be confined as long as Argus is still somewhat present in our reality. I honestly don't know. Like, it's interesting to think about. It's not like I'm opposed to seeing more of Argus. I really feel like it's kind of unfortunate that a world soul died. And it does kind of mean that I don't think we're ever going to, like, imagine what that would feel like for the Draenei to realize that your world's never coming back. You're never going to get it back. It's gone, and it's gone forever. It's dead now. The soul of your world died. So that's a pretty tragic story, and I would like to see something more, maybe more just with the fallout of it or explaining what happens next or something, but I definitely don't think we're going to see Argus in Shadowlands.
Yeah, I think we might find out maybe a little bit more about that, because when we're talking about the first ones, I'm sure there's going to be some Titan linkage there at some point, which may give us some more direction to go with that. But right now, I agree with Matt. I don't think we're going to be seeing Argus anytime soon. But that's going to do it for this week. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. And again, if you have questions for the show, be sure to send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com or one of our many Discord channels dedicated to that. And with that, thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
Kayla Itzinis. I'm Kayla Itzinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.